This is FM 100.5 and 101.9. AM 1450, Rutherford County's place to talk. WGNS, Murfreesboro, your good neighbor station. This is The Truman Show with Truman Jones. A look at the politics, news, sports, and people that are shaping Rutherford County. Now your host, Truman Jones.
Good afternoon, Rutherford County. We're going to have a great show again, as always. We have Shirley Ferris Jones, and we will go back in history a little bit, and we'll get on a lot of subjects today. And we want to let you know that if you're currently having trouble keeping up with your responsibilities in your home, and it looks like that you may have to move out because you just can't really hack it anymore, well, you don't have to. You can call at Home Care, and that's 713-4639, or pull them up on the internet, www.homecaretennessee.com, and they'll come into your home 24/7, take care of all the responsibilities inside your house. They'll run errands for you. They'll do everything that you have to have done to be able to stay at home. And this is a way that you can really enjoy it. I mean, you've worked all your life, so why not be able to sit back, enjoy the comforts of your home? And I say again, give them a call at 713-4639 or go over to their place of business, 237 Castlewood Drive, Suite H, right behind the Kroger's on Memorial Boulevard, and they'll be glad to see you. Well, Shirley, another great day in Rutherford County, Murfreesboro, Tennessee. It's just like heaven in here, isn't it?
I guess. It is a
good... All right, what's your problem today?
It's a good place to be. There's no better place to be, Truman, that's for sure.
Yeah, I was watching one of the... what is it? Are You Smarter Than a Fifth Grader? Do you ever watch any of these game shows?
I'm afraid to.
Well, I know one thing. I'm not smarter than a fifth grader, I can tell you that. And they were talking about, and I actually knew this question. The question that came up was, what year was Abraham Lincoln elected president of the United States?
Well, 1860.
Very good. You and I would have been, we would have been right. It was amazing, even the guy was. But you're more knowledgeable than most people when it you look back at our heritage.
Oh,
and it's
thank
so
you.
Strong. I mean, it really is. And I am so proud of all of our ancestors here who made this community what it is today. And it's such a thriving community.
You know, both of our heritage goes back a long way. And that's what Roots is all about, I think. That's, you know, this is who we are. This is where we ought to be.
And you've been able to maintain a focus on this all these years. Now, you were telling me that you became a member of the Rutherford County Historical Society, I believe you said, in 1989.
It was 88, 86. I think it's maybe it's 86 or 87, something like that. I've been a member of the board since 1989. I served four terms as president, and it's a great group of people. They do a lot of good things, and we'd welcome you to come join us.
Actually, I am thinking about it, and I was thinking, after you've been on so long, and you and Greg and all the others that have put your time and energy into making sure that everybody else is aware of the things that went on as far as the history of our community, I keep thinking, it may get a little boring after a while, because you're on the same subject, and I'm sure from time to time that you'll come up with new ideas from new people, but you really need new blood. And you need people who have information that they could share with everybody that maybe you haven't come up with yet.
Well, that's true. There are always new challenges, but new ideas are always welcome. And we would welcome anybody who is not a member to come, you know, come visit us. Come join us for a meeting. You don't have to pay your money right then if you want to. Greg will probably go after you for money, but, you know, we'll let him do that. But
he does the hard part.
Yeah. But, you know, I look back at folks like Dr. Homer Pittard, Mabel Pittard, Lurleen Rushen. There's so many wonderful people. Eugene Sloan, you know, people who gave so much. The Matheny's, you know, people who really have given so much of their time and energy, and they have made a difference, you know, as far as preserving, protecting, promoting, you know, the artifacts and the things that make Rutherford County and Murfreesboro unique and special to the rest of the world.
And it's important for us to keep the historical society alive because, let's face it, most people are not going to spend a lot of time and energy looking at the past. They really aren't. They're more concerned with what the day is and what the future, probably more than any other time that I can remember. But yet, you guys are still maintaining a strong presence in here.
We are the history of
you are. You really are. I mean,
but you know, it's sad. So many young people they're called the sandwich generation. You know, they have aging parents on one hand, they have teenagers or young children on the other, and they don't have a lot of time. Many of them don't have a lot of money, you know, for memberships and, you know, or to hire a babysitter or to get involved with something like that. So, you know, you have to reach that point in your life when you have the time and the energy, you know, to be able to get involved. And there's a place for everybody, as I've often said. Historical preservation is not for everybody, but there is a place. And to find that special point that you feel you can make, where you feel you can make a significant difference, where you feel that you have something to contribute, where you have something to offer, that's what's really important. Because if we were all alike in every aspect, it would be kind of boring.
Well, I think one thing that may trigger people's interest would be everybody wants to do a trace of the family tree.
Sometimes they want you to do it for them.
Yeah, yeah. But there are so many opportunities to do that that were never around before. And actually, you can go through the internet or almost any other means right now, and it's fairly easy to trace it back. But of course, I'm sure you would want to get more in depth and find all where all the branches go in your family tree.
There's such a tremendous amount of information available. You have to be careful. Yes, I mean, you know, everybody. George Washington didn't sleep everywhere, let's put it like that. Mm-hmm. So you've got to, you know, to be select. The best thing that people can do is to talk and record the oral history of their families, of the area that the living family members, their grandparents, perhaps even their great-grandparents, have and, you know, can recall. And then to start with that and document it, start with your, you know, with your own age, go back a generation, then another generation. And I had this instilled in me. I had wonderful grandparents, and my grandfather Lowe was probably one of the biggest components of preserving the oral history of the Lowe family in the Big Springs community here. And when he passed away in 1975, it suddenly hit me that, boy, if something wasn't done to document all this oral history that, you know, he had shared with me, it would be lost. And so that was kind of how I got started. But then on my father's side of the family, they documented everything in written form. And boy, that was really handy. And so I had a legacy literally handed, you know, down to me through my dad's side of the family that was pretty well documented. But still, there were some, you know, some holes that I needed to fill in and everything. And there's one thing about it, you're never complete. You're never done. And you get the answer to one question, and it only evokes 11 others. But there are answers for those two sometimes. And you meet some wonderful people along the way.
Do you kind of have like your own library where you can go and pick out certain things, events that have happened in history that are particularly fond of you?
Civil War history, of course, is my passion. Always has been. I find that the most interesting. But there again, it's because of the personal connection that I have. But some of the personas, the women, the role of women in the Civil War has always been very appealing to me because women had no voice, they had no vote. But boy, they took such an active role and made such a difference. But there again, yes, I'm running out of room at my house, in fact.
It's obvious that you have zeroed in on what the ladies in the South, what their contribution was during that time. And actually, it has evolved all the way into today's time, what an influence that the ladies are. And it seemed like it's always been that way, that the men are the ones that would go out and fight the war or go out and do those things, but it was the women who actually were the strength of the families at that time.
They had to be. You know, with their men gone, women, well, especially during the Civil War, and I'm sure this would be true with any war, you know, women had depended upon their man, their husband, their father, their brother, you know, to provide for them, to lay the groundwork for the type of lifestyle that they would have. And when that man was gone off to war, then here suddenly they had to pick up the pieces. And it was amazing how quickly they did so and how competently they were able to pick up the slack and do what needed to be done. When at the outbreak of the war between the states, or the Civil War, however one chooses to call it, the first thing the women of Murfreesboro and Rutherford County did, what can we do? What's needed? They began to look, you know, at places for hospitals, at obtaining supplies and making beds. And Murfreesboro was known, at the beginning of the war, Murfreesboro was known for having some of the best food and the better equipped hospitals in the South.
You think Margaret Mitchell hit it right on when she wrote Gone with the Wind and portraying Scarlett as the strength of the whole group? I mean, she really was stronger than anybody. And I think the one scene in Gone with the Wind was where she's standing out there in the kind of like the garden, and she is so frustrated.
I will never go hungry again.
Right, right. Uh-huh. And she'll do anything not to go hungry again.
God is my witness, I will never go hungry again. Oh, I love that line.
I knew you'd know that one.
I love that line. But Margaret Mitchell, yes, she did. She did select a character of amazing strength. Mm-hmm. Perhaps a woman who did not always make the best choices. But Scarlett was an amazing woman. Was she indicative of all the women of the South? Not especially. Not everybody made their outfit from their velvet curtains. I mean, you know, Carol Burnett. You may remember this segment, but did you ever see the one where Carol Burnett was doing this takeoff on Scarlett O'Hara when she was making her outfit, you know, to go meet Rhett Butler? And she was putting on the outfit made from curtains, and she had the curtain rod still in it.
Only Carol Burnett.
That was not typical of women of the South.
but it seems like they could overcome adversity. It just didn't destroy them. I mean, when one thing would go wrong, something else had to open up for them. And it seems like they always had that attitude. And not only were they dealing with all those type things, but they were having to take care of all of the wounded people and the soldiers when they came in. It had to be just one of the most depressing times in their whole life.
It was an absolutely horrible time. And, you know, in researching the war itself, there's so many diaries, there's so many letters that men wrote home to their wives, and they would say, well, you know, please keep this, and if I survive the war, perhaps someday, you know, I'll look back and with fondness, you know, on what transpired. The men knew that they were making history. They knew it was an important period of time. So few women's letters survived. So very few, partly because if they sent the letters, you know, to their husbands, the husbands were in war, and, you know, they had no means to protect them. But after the war, the men came home sick, tired, war-weary, worn out. Mm-hmm. It was the women, you know, who literally gave them the strength to carry on. And it was the women, those who were literate, those who had pencil and paper at hand, who kept diaries after the war. And the difficult times that they had between 1865, when the war ended, mm-hmm. and actually just about the turn of the century before things began to really get better, noticeably better.
The Historical Society and yourself, have you been able to capture many of those letters that were written here? And would those letters have been, and not just the letters, for maybe they were keeping diaries and they wanted to keep up with the events that happened during that time. That would be so valuable if you had those treasures.
You have to really dig. There are still some that are available, thank goodness. Mm-hmm. Virginia French kept a diary, and she lived in McMinnville, and of course she could hear the cannonading from the Battle of Stones River, but that's been very valuable. There are other letters available. There are not that many, but so many women did not have the means. They did not have pencil and paper. They didn't. Many of them were not literate. Especially lacking of those difficult times are African American voices. Mm-hmm. You know, they're very few, and it had to have been an extremely difficult time for African American women, a totally displaced people. You know, free, yes, free to do what?
It was fairly common at that time for the ladies not to be educated, wasn't it? You had to be on a higher level of society.
The ladies went to a finishing school. They had to know how to embroidery. They had to know how to, well, maybe play the harp, certainly the piano. The more affluent, you know, spoke two or three different languages, mm-hmm. and that they had learned at, you know, a finishing school, an academy. But as far as your plain old farm girl, she knew how to milk, she knew how to cook, she knew how to sew, she knew how to birth babies.
Mm-hmm. But it seems such a tragedy in some ways. Of course, all those talents that they had were needed.
Oh, absolutely.
But so many great minds that could have taken part in things of political things or whatever, that they never really had an opportunity to.
Women had no voice, women had no vote, and the Civil War was the first war in which women could take such an active role, which they did, and could do so without losing their status as ladies.
Now that kind of goes beyond my ability to understand some
Mine
of the
too.
Things that were going on. But when you reach back, I know some of the things that you like, but I got a feeling that you really like to delve into the minds of the ladies that time and reach into their emotions and find out just exactly how they were able to survive and become successful at that time.
That, to me, is the most fascinating aspect. And, of course, my emphasis has been on Martha Reedy Morgan. Mm-hmm. She was a woman ahead of her time. I find her a fascinating woman of enduring strength. Mm-hmm. She was 22 years old when she married John Hunt Morgan. 630 days later, their marriage was over. Of course, she was a widow. Mm-hmm. She had lost one child. She had lost her husband. She had lost one child, and she had another baby. And she did not see her parents from the time she left in January of 1863 until July of 65 when she returned. This young widow, you know, she had been through so much. She had lost, you know, she had lost so much, including the aristocratic way of life that she had always known. She had lost her husband. She mm-hmm. had lost one child. It was just a whole different ball game. Yet she had the strength, you know, to carry on. She presented herself as the wife of a lost cause hero, and for 8 years she devoted herself exclusively to raising young Johnny, her daughter by John Hunt Morgan, and you know, to doing what she could to preserve the legacy of the fallen heroes of the South, namely her husband being one of them.
You know, one of the things that we've been aware of for years is when soldiers have been in battle and the war has taken such a total effect of their bodies and their minds, and when they come back, it's extremely hard sometimes for them to adjust to the way society is now because of all mm-hmm. the things that they've seen and been through. But yet these women were right in the middle of it. They saw all the tragedies that were going on. They had personal losses all around them, family, friends, and all that. But yet, they were able to endure and become successful. What made them so strong at that time?
They didn't have a choice. They simply, you know, many of them had other children. Caroline McGavock, you know, Carrington Plantation in Franklin, mm-hmm. she lost so many young children before they never reached the age of 2 or 3 or 6. And so she hired a wet nurse, or she didn't hire, she had a wet nurse, mm-hmm. a slave, and she would not get attached to any more children after losing so many babies until they reached the age of 6 and stood a better chance of survival. Now, you know, that's hard to imagine, you know, to give birth to a child mm-hmm. and then not want to love it and nurture it and I guess that was part of her own survival. She had been through so much. Mm-hmm. You know, how much pain can, you know, a woman really endure? But yet Caroline McGavock was the one who saw all of the soldiers killed at the Battle of Franklin who were buried, and she brought some order to their burial. She actually had some of their body, you know, had their bodies dug up. If there was anything in their pockets to identify them or what state they were from, she would write to their relatives. Can you imagine? And I cannot imagine doing that now, really. You know, but they were buried on her property at Carrington. And she organized the soldiers' graves by states, you know, Texas, Mississippi, Alabama, all the states that fought at the Battle of Franklin, and had the bodies reinterred in a more orderly fashion and notified their family members whenever possible.
I think every soldier that has been in war or been in battle deserves to be honored.
Absolutely.
I don't
Absolutely.
Care what's out there honor. When you're out there on the battlefield, it's just different. But the way that we're relating right now, there are a lot of ladies that were not in uniform that should have been honored also, mm-hmm. because they went through excruciating times. I mean, it's unbelievable to even fathom how that they were emotionally and mentally able to get through it.
Well, look at the sacrifices that women made in World War II and got so little recognition.
Well, that's
uh-huh.
true.
Uh-huh. I mean, that's where a lot of it really began, I think. Mm-hmm. You know, gee, that woman can fly a plane. How mm-hmm. about that, you know? Or, hey, that woman can run a full-court basketball press. Took us a while on that one, didn't it? Title IX.
Yeah, where'd you come from that one?
Yeah, that just came to mind. But
you know, one thing that you and I haven't touched on is the ladies, the slaves, became parents for the children.
Oh, absolutely, yes.
Of the people mm-hmm. that they worked for. And actually, they became family members, and I am sure that looking from both points of view, they cherished the families that were there because
they certainly did.
They had to.
They certainly did, and they would lay their life on the line in many instances, you know, for their these extended family members. They mm-hmm. were their children, and they suffered. In fact, there are documented accounts of when, you know, the white children would go to their black mammies, as mm-hmm. they were called, rather than their own parents, you know, with problems or heartaches or whatever. And they did have such a big role, and that has been overlooked. There's just been a lot of things and events pertaining to African American heritage and the contribution of blacks that has not been documented, which is very unfortunate. You know, they're not letters, they're not diaries, except, you know, in a very few instances. What were their feelings? What mm-hmm. a scary time it had to have been for them, because they had been fed, they had been protected. I mean, of course, slavery was a horrible institution, but they did have something to eat. They did have a roof over their head, and now what? You know, when the Emancipation Proclamation went into effect, and many of them did return, you know, there were a lot of really bad things that happened. And as I say, slavery was a horrid institution. But not everybody was a cruel, mean master, mm-hmm. you know, who visited the slave cabins at night. That was not the case. And not that it didn't happen, it did. There were a lot of bad things. There were a lot of bad people, you know, doing bad things. But there were also, there was a lot of kindness. There were a lot of white masters who freed their slaves mm-hmm. and who took care of them, protected them, and provided for them. And, you know, there was goodness and humanity. And you hear about the bad stuff.
Well, you had to have loyalty on both ends because they trusted each other.
That's right.
If you have children, you want the best people that you can find to take care of your children.
That's exactly right.
And once they accept the role, we're talking about the ladies who are taking care of them, they automatically became part of that family. And I can remember, and I don't know if Margaret Mitchell meant for it to be or how the movie panned out as far as she was concerned, but I remember Mammy was my favorite character over Scarlett in the whole show, because she was the one that was always grounded and always trying to make sure that everything was done the right way, up against terrible odds, trying to deal with Scarlett's silliness and all those type things. And I just really felt more comfortable with her than I did any of the other characters.
She was a very inspiring character, and it was so neat when Rhett brought her the red petticoat.
Yes. Yeah.
That was a great movie. I haven't seen it in quite some time, but it was wonderful.
So, when are you going to be able to go that direction? Or have you been dealing with that? Or is it very difficult
to
find
any? It's very, very difficult. It's very difficult. When I was president of the Historical Society, we were CBRNet had done Main Street to Mink Slide, and that's a wonderful book. Mm-hmm. But there again, it stops right at the edge of you know, where blacks had their businesses on Vine Street. Mm-hmm. And I thought, you know, this needs to be documented. It's very, very difficult to find documentation as to where a lot of blacks had their successful businesses on Vine Street and, you know, in the bottoms. I did an interview with a young lady from the Center for Historic Preservation on Friday. They're doing a project about the bottoms. Mm-hmm. And that's an area that's extremely hard to document, and it ties right in with, you know, the African Americans' role as far as being business owners and successful mm-hmm. business owners. And there is very little documentation as far as deeds and who owned property. Mm-hmm. And do you remember the bottoms?
Oh, yes, I do.
I do, too. I remember.
You remember going to the ice house over there?
I remember the ice man bringing ice to my house on Spring Street.
And he was one of the – I enjoyed him. He was a very interesting man. And we would always – of course, this was before we had refrigerators and stuff like that. We all went to his place to get our ice to keep our food cooked.
Well, he had property. He owned property right on the edge of the bottoms. And mm-hmm. so they have documented that. In fact, we were talking about that last week during the interview. But there were a lot of squatters, I mm-hmm. guess you would say, and that was a very undesirable section, you know, of Murfreesboro. It flooded all the time, and there was just...
That's why they call it the bottoms.
The bottoms, that's right. But they're trying to do some research on that now, and it's from what she was telling me, they're finding some, but very little, and it's just like pulling teeth trying to find, you know, one little tidbit of information.
I guess a lot of it probably would be mouth to mouth, wouldn't it be, from the people that are still here who have knowledge of what went on.
Interestingly, Jennifer, the young lady I did the interview with, was telling me that she ran into a lot of the very same problems that I and other members of the Historical Society who were trying to do something with this project in 1993 or 94. Nobody wants to talk to you about it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and
I wonder why.
I don't know. I really don't. Maybe it was an unpleasant remembrance. Maybe it was an unhappy experience. I don't know. But I ran into this too, and people whom I felt had something to contribute or, you know, something to offer, they didn't want to talk about it. Hmm. And it's a piece of history. And as I have argued so many times, you do not compare a man of, well, say the 19th century with a man of the 21st century, or any other time for that matter. You accept what was as it was. You learn from it, hopefully, and you don't make the same mistakes again. But it's very, very difficult, and she has encountered some of the very same problems today that we encountered in the early 90s trying to, you know, do something with that area.
Well, I know the Iceman was very proud of his business.
He had a good business.
And he was very proud of his property. And if I remember right, and I could be wrong, but the last I remember, they were trying to buy that property off of him, and he wouldn't sell. And from what I can understand, it is a fairly substantial amount of money.
That has raised another issue, you know, when Broad Street... when that was determined that there was going to be a road through there, and they started cleaning up the bottoms, you know, mm-hmm. with, I think, two housing projects, one for the whites and one for the blacks. The people who did own land, did everybody get a fair price? Now, that has raised...
That's always a question, even today.
Right,
it doesn't matter.
Right, and that's could be an issue, you know. I mean, maybe everybody did not get a fair price. Mm-hmm. Maybe white people had an advantage.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the white people who own land, maybe they got a better price for their land, or, you know, the better educated blacks, maybe they got a better, you know, if they had, you know, if they knew what the property value was than some of the others who were taken advantage of. And that's not something to really look back with pride on. It's kind of a dark cloud over our.
Well, so you're looking at it from a different angle than I am. I'm looking at it that he loved his place,
mm-hmm.
and nobody was going to buy his place off of mm-hmm. him. It was just one of those things that I really did respect, you know, when I did hear that.
Yeah.
And we're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back with Shirley Ferris Jones.
HGTV, the leader in home design and know-how, has joined Shaw Floors, the leader in flooring and City Tile and Floor Covering, the largest flooring retailer in our area, to bring you HGTV Home Flooring by Shaw Collection. Doug Young with City Tile.
Come to City Tile and see the new selections of the HGTV products exclusively at City Tile.
Your HGTV Home Flooring by Shaw authorized retailer. Visit citytile.net. City Tile and Floor Covering.
And because diet is such an important part of health, here at Animal City, we have taken great care to only select the best foods for the health of your pet. We have many premium foods to choose from to keep your pet healthy and happy. Hi, this is Amanda at Animal City, inviting your family to come in and visit my family. Here in our bird department at Animal City, we have new babies hatching every week. Please stop in and we'll keep you updated. Animal City is located at 919 Northwest Broad Street, next to the bowling alley.
This is Good Neighbor Events, brought to you by the Omni Hut Restaurant in Smyrna, AmeriCare Pest Control, and the Rutherford Home Show, Saturday mornings at 11:30 on WGNS.
Aloha, this is Omni Hut.
Everything's made from scratch at the Omni Hut Restaurant. Here's Polly Walls.
I can buy a pre-made store commissary egg roll for less than I can produce my own, but they're not as good, so we stay with what we know. Start from scratch, fresh kitchen.
Traditional luau dinners, Tahitian tidbits, egg rolls, all made from scratch at the Omni Hut.
Come see us at 618 South Lowry Street, just inside Smyrna, near Nissan.
Let's check those Good Neighbor events. Photographs by my buddy Dan Whittle are on display now through June 30th at the Art Center of Cannon County. Don't forget the 20th anniversary luau at the Stones River Country Club for the Primary Care and Hope Center. That's Saturday, June the 16th. Get in touch with Betty McFarland at 893-3930. Again, the 20th anniversary luau is June the 16th. And right now through June the 20th, you're encouraged to stuff the bus as United Way collects school supplies that will be placed in literacy kits and given to needy pre-kindergarten through the third grade students at local schools. Check with United Way for more information. And it's time to adopt one of the 10,000 yellow rubber ducks that'll float down the Stones River at 4:23 on Saturday, June the 23rd. And the first duck through the flume gets its owner $5,000. The Rubber Duck Derby benefits the Child Advocacy Center of Rutherford and Cannon Counties. Don't forget the Rubber Duck Derby on Saturday, June the 23rd. That's right there on the Medical Center Parkway at the Sportsman's Club. Adopt your rubber duck today. And those are Good Neighbor Events.
We make important choices in our lives every day. You owe it to yourself to make an informed decision about where to receive cancer treatment. The Cancer Center at Middle Tennessee Medical Center offers the area's only accredited program. That means it meets the high standards set by the Commission on Cancer. We consider it a blessing to provide you with the very best care available. To locate an MTMC physician, call 284-LIFE. Why choose any place else?
The Braves have been right here since 1981. This is Don Sutton, and you're listening to WGNS Murfreesboro.
You're listening to The Truman Show on WGNS AM and FM. Now, back to Truman Jones.
And welcome back with us. And, of course, I have Shirley Ferris Jones all today. And we want to let you know that this part of her show is brought to you by Gordon Ralston Photography. And they're at 315 Hickerson Drive, in right here in Murfreesboro. You can reach them at 396-8776 or pull them up on the internet, www.gordonralstonphoto.com. And Al Gordon, who is a master craftsman photographer, and Larry Ralston, certified craftsman, both hometown guys, and they are also in the, well, Larry was in the class of 62. Believe it or not, 50 years ago.
Wow.
And they just got through having their class reunion. I think they had 3 days of it, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. So I hope everybody out there that was in that class had a great time this weekend. And they are the most awarded studio in the Murfreesboro area, operating a full-service photographic studio in Murfreesboro. And they specialize in weddings, high school seniors, and family portraits, And I'm sure they took the pictures. In fact, I know they did, of the reunion. And their work is classic yet current with a creative edge. Al was even awarded the Grand Award for the Best Wedding Image in the World. Gordon Ralston, they look forward to meeting you and will treat you like family. And we were talking about the Bottoms, and I was reading the, I shouldn't say reading, I was looking at the book, the Pictorial History of Murfreesboro in Rutherford County. And one of the pictures I remember was of the Bottoms, and it shows it like it was back when we remember it when we were kids, and how it is now. And it's just completely changed around. I mean, they just came through and just completely revamped that area. And I don't remember the Bottoms looking as rugged as it did in that picture, but I guess it does. I guess when you're younger, you have more of an idealistic way of looking at things.
I guess my only recollection of the Bottoms, or the only time that I was ever over there, I went with Daddy. Mm-hmm. And Daddy went over there to pick up a black man who was going to dig some post holes. Mm-hmm. And it was really an awakening for me, you know, so near yet so far away. And I was astounded at the way people lived. You know, I mean, there were a lot of shacks. There were holes where windows should be, but there were no windows. It was just a pathetic way of living. And something I thought about, I know it flooded, and I know I can remember, you know, there were the mud holes and a bunch of poor skinny dogs. And being a dog lover, I felt sorry for the poor dogs. But drinking water, where did drinking water come from over there? There was no sanitation. I mean, there were no sewers. There were no sanitary sewers, as I think the term is.
And that's hard for us to even comprehend.
Yeah, and there were in drinking water, I don't remember seeing any wells or anything, but it had to have been abominable, I mean, really, to drink any water from that area over there.
You know, that's something I never have even thought about, because I lived in the country most of my life, and we all had our own wells. Mm-hmm. And I don't know at what point in time, I guess I should know, when Murfreesboro City created their water system to take care of the sewer and the runoffs and all those things that were going on. Mm-hmm. Surely they had city water at that time. I think
but
we
not
did.
Over in the Bottoms.
They didn't?
I don't think so. I don't think they had electricity.
Oh, my goodness.
I mean, it was a pathetic way of life. I mean, living conditions were worse than anything I had ever seen. And I was amazed, well, really surprised, that Daddy let me go with him. I guess maybe Daddy and I had been somewhere, or he had picked me up or something, and he had to go get this guy, this fellow who was going to dig some post holes for him. And the thing I remember, and my goodness, I couldn't have been more than 8 or 9 years old, but the fellow, he had done work for Daddy before, and he was telling Daddy that he had lived in this shack, but mm-hmm. it was his house, it was his home, his castle. Mm-hmm. And some people had burned each other out on a regular basis, and some Murfreesboro names that I'm sure you would be familiar with that I'd better probably not say on the air. But anyway, they had gotten in there, these are white folks, mm-hmm. and they had gotten in their weekend brawl, and they had a big fire, and so they decided to move in on this man, and they this black man, and they took his house, and you know, he didn't own it. I guess he was just kind of a squatter or something, and he didn't have much, but it was, hey, if, you know, a bed and a table's all you got, then, you know, that's all you got. And they moved in, and his dog was used to living in there with him, and he loved his dog, and I thought that was so sad. And so the dog stayed with them, and he lost his house and his dog, and there was nothing anybody could do, because I thought maybe Daddy could fix it. Daddy didn't want to get involved.
Sound like the Wild West.
Daddy didn't get involved in that, but it was really pitiful, and the man had nowhere to stay. And I know my dad did make a couple of calls, and he found somebody who had a basement, and they would let him stay in their basement, you know, until he could find somewhere else to go or something, or maybe these people would decide to move on, and he could move back in his house. But I thought that was so sad.
Yeah, there were a lot of sad times back then, but you know, there were a lot of good times, but people were seen to be in some ways stronger at that time. And I guess it's because you have to adapt. You really do. When things get really bad, yeah, you have to. And one of the saddest stories But yet it's uplifting too, is the death of Sam Davis. And how he wrote his letter to his mom was just like kind of matter of fact. This is what's going to happen to me. I have done my duty. I have kept my honor.
Do not grieve for me. I am not afraid to die. Mm-hmm.
I have supported my friends. I did not betray them. And I can't think of any time in history where a person has stood so tall for the things that he believed in with such courage. And death didn't even seem to affect him.
At such a young age, too. I mean, he was a kid. Mm-hmm. I think of how young I was at 21.
We all were at 21.
It's been a while. But what a remarkable young man, and what courage. All the Coleman Scouts, though, had to have a remarkable degree of courage. They had to believe, you know, so much in the cause for which they were fighting. That's what kept them going. And even after a dose of reality set in, say in 1864, okay, the South's probably not going to win. Mm-hmm. So many of them were honor bound. My great grandfather was one of them. You know, I mean, he did not even feel that it was in the best interest for the South to win the war, but yet he was honor bound to that cause that he had committed himself.
Did you kind of feel in that letter that Sam Davis wrote to his mother that he was trying to make sure that she did not grieve for him as much as she normally would, that he wanted to let her know how he felt and the honor that he felt? And a lot of that was directed to ease his mom's pain.
I think so. He loved his mother. And Jane Simmons Davis was, you know, she was a remarkable lady in herself. And I think he told her, you know, don't, you know, please don't forget me, and tell the young'uns, you know, mm-hmm. to be good. And I think he was, you know, there again, that was part of the responsible young man. And what a remarkable young man he was.
Uh-huh. I mean, he's a role model for everybody. Yeah. It doesn't matter which side you're fighting on or anything like that. When you have somebody that can step up to the plate and take mm-hmm. anything you throw at them and still hold your head high with dignity, there's something special about somebody like that.
Absolutely, because, you know, you think of how many young men, oh, shoot, I'm going to die. I hate everybody. You know, mm-hmm. why me? You know, it just makes him that more special. And you appreciate his character even more so, I think.
Did anybody ever do an in-depth interview with her, his mom, and get a understanding of what she herself went through dealing with that?
Not to my knowledge. Not to my knowledge.
Shame. Uh-huh.
And, you know, I doubt if they even, I mean, here again, this woman had no voice. She had no vote. They might think about interviewing his father or his brother, who was also a Coleman Scout, who later married Mary Kate Patterson. But, you know, they probably didn't even think about his mother.
And that's something that's really lost, because I can't imagine, because there's nobody closer than a mom and her children.
That's
there
true.
Really
mm-hmm.
are.
Especially a mother and her son.
Yeah, mm-hmm. yeah. And to know that she's so proud that he's gone mm-hmm. off, and then when he does mm-hmm. what he does mm-hmm. in such a heroic way, she has to be extremely mm-hmm. proud of him. But still, there's that loss of sharing the rest of her life with her son.
And the everyday things, you know, she had dyed an overcoat to keep him, to keep her baby warm. Mm-hmm. You know, as mothers, you know, our babies, they're always our babies. They may be 6'3", but they're always our babies.
Do you think the women are still standing tall like they were back in the 1860s?
Yeah, in a different way, though. You know, I am woman, hear me roar.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we've come, you know, women.
They've taken new directions, though, since then.
They've taken the new directions, and that's a good thing. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, the idea of a woman not being paid equal pay for doing the same job as a man, I mean, mm-hmm. that's outrageous.
It is.
And or a woman, you know, being discriminated against simply because she is a woman and not mm-hmm. a man, I find that so unacceptable. I'm a very liberated woman.
Discrimination is so terrible in so many ways.
It's ignorance.
It's ignorance. But look at all of the talent that you lose because mm-hmm. of discrimination.
And I think discrimination is done a lot out of ignorance. It's done out of fear. It's done out of selfishness. And I see that a lot in today's politics, mm-hmm. and it's sickening. It's pathetic, and it's sickening.
Yeah, sometimes politics does not always take you to the correct end, which is just part of it.
That's right. It does not show you the best in people, does it?
No. Now, the Historical Society has been one of those groups that I have been very fond of, watching them grow and do so many good things for the community. And one of the things that Murfreesboro seems to have, and I guess you probably have it more in the South than anywhere else, is to preserve special homes, special buildings, special properties that have meant so much in the growth of that community.
Well, while the Historical Society recognizes those and documents those, the Association for the Preservation of Tennessee Antiquities is more into placing a marker, you know, making people aware, mm-hmm. presenting an awareness, presenting, an appreciation for that property or the historical significance attached to it. Many times people are not as quick to tear something down if they realize, you know, what has transpired in that property. And mm-hmm. we've done a lot of things right, but we've done a lot of things that we could have done better. I wish we had a redo. We've lost some very special sites and places. And the Historical Society, from time to time, has taken a role as far as having a voice for historic preservation. It was a very critical time for Stones River National Battlefield, the 4 years that I was president, as far as land acquisition, and they mm-hmm. did double in size. And I was president from 90 to 94, and I was very happy to, with the Historical Society's support, for us to take a role as far as showing our support for preserving hallowed ground and, you know, for Stones River National Battlefield.
You know, it's taken a long time. We're talking about 140 plus years, but it seems like there's more interest in it now than there was, especially when we were kids. I mean, there was very little. I mean, you would every once in a while see something in a paper or
you want to hear something funny?
Yeah.
When I was growing up on Memorial Day, my parents and grandparents took me to the Yankee graveyard.
Oh no.
They did for Memorial Day.
Yeah.
That was just something that we did. I don't know why, but they just felt that it was important because, you know, Stones River National Battlefield did have a Memorial Day celebration. And so we, and many people around Murfreesboro still referred to it as the old Yankee graveyard.
Hmm.
And I thought that was kind of odd, but, you know, that's the way it was. And so I grew up with an appreciation for Stones River National Battlefield being not only in the National Park Service, but, you know, being the site of a major battle that really opened, you know, the gateway to Chattanooga when you get right down to it. But then we also had Confederate Memorial Day, too, so, you know, let's give equal time. But during the course of many preservation efforts that I've been involved with and so forth, I've been astounded. People who have lived here all of their life, people I went to school with and I've known forever, have never been to Stones River National Battlefield. Yeah, I know where that is. I've driven by there lots of times, or I walk my dog out there, you know. But as far as actually knowing what the battle was all about, visiting the visitor center, taking a look, you know, at the film they have, you know, that tells you a lot about it. Walking the walk, talking the talk. They've never had any interest in it.
You know, I don't remember any educational processes that took us when we were in grade school over there. I don't remember actually going. I was blacked out that day, but I actually do not remember ever going there when I was in school.
Well, I think we did. I went to Critchlow, and I think we did. And I still have a booklet that I made for Stones River, for the Battle of Stones River.
Mm-hmm.
And we could determine our own outcome, and I did.
Who won?
Take a guess. I rewrote history. I can't remember. I don't think it was Jack Jolly. I guess it must have been E.P. Charles at Critchlow said I had a very creative imagination.
That sounds like a phrase that Jack Jolly would use.
You know, he was a wonderful teacher. He was my eighth grade teacher.
Jack Jolly influenced so many people in the classroom, outside the classroom. He is one of our people that has made such a positive statement as far as our particular area is
and
concerned.
You know, we were talking about the role of women. Mm-hmm. Dolly, if you're listening, you are the reason that you are the woman behind Jack. Dolly and Jack are two wonderful, wonderful people.
Well, you know why Dolly married him, don't you?
For money.
No.
I'm kidding.
She wanted her name to rhyme.
With Dolly
Jolly.
Dolly Jolly. Dolly Jolly.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Well, it, no.
She has done a great job with him over the years.
Well, I have lunch with Dolly in the group I'm with from time to time, and she is just a lovely, lovely lady. And Jack has been one of my favorite human beings since the eighth grade.
You know, during the war, there was no school, was there? Or did they have school during the war?
I think so.
Civil War.
Oh, during the Civil War? Yeah. No. Academies were suspended. I mean, there was homeschooling. And in some instances, they would hire, you know, somebody to come teach their children to live on the property.
You know, a lot of people keep saying, well, you know, the South keeps fighting the war. Well, what a lot of people don't understand was the war was primarily fought in the South.
The war came in our own front yard.
That's where the blood was let and all those other things. So, you know, it should remain a very important part of our history, and that's one of those things that we should not forget. And it's a shame when you said a minute ago that some people have never been to that battlefield, and it makes you wonder, how do they get so lost in the things that should be important to them?
I thought about asking, but I thought, well, maybe not, but I've really thought about it. But you know, okay, tomorrow's June 5th, right?
I think
it is too. Okay, on June 8th, 3 days from tomorrow, 150 years ago, the flag, no, 151 years, because the flag, the Confederate flag, was hoisted above the courthouse on June the 8th of 1861. So that would be 151 years ago, and that's when things began to change. And when that Confederate flag was raised, never in a million years did the people of Murfreesboro in Rutherford County ever dream that war would come to them, that war would be fought in their own backyard or front yard, as the case may have been, that they would ever hear the groans of the dying, the rattle of musketry, or God knows what sights would transpire right before their eyes.
I'm not too sure, and I talked to Greg about this, Greg Tucker. I'm not too sure either side or anybody realized what the final outcome was going to be. And I'm not too sure everybody even knew what in the world they were fighting for. Sometimes those things seem to be trapped in just a few offices, and the rest of the information just doesn't get out.
And nobody, the higher-ups, the ones who determined, what was going to happen.
I'm not sure they even knew what was going to happen.
Nobody, I don't think, could have ever envisioned the lengthy process that would be involved. You know, there were 10-month enlistments. Mm-hmm. And, this sounds exciting. And we'll sign up for 10 months, and, you know, the ladies will kiss us goodbye and all that kind of stuff. And nobody could even imagine in their wildest dreams what they were in for. And the South was not prepared. It was such a foolish thing. You know, the South was in no way prepared. So it was interesting. Hopefully we learned something.
And we're going to take a quick break, and maybe we'll learn something before we come back home.
Southern Community Bank, unlike all the rest. Beverly Barker, branch manager.
Southern Community Bank is a strong, independent community partner with a simple philosophy. Keep banking hassle-free for people who just want to be treated well.
We're unlike all the rest. Our services are intuitive. Our team is friendly. Our approach is refreshing. And our service is clearly unique.
We're located at 1950 Old Fort Parkway, next to the DoubleTree Hotel.
Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
Okay, Murfreesboro, the quack is back. That's right, you heard it here first. The Ducks are back in town on June 23rd for the Sudsy's Car Wash Child Advocacy Center Rubber Duck Derby. We plan to float 10,000 rubber ducks down the Stones River, all to raise money for the Child Advocacy Center of Rutherford and Cannon Counties. $5 gets a duck entered into the race for a chance to win a $5,000 cash grand prize. You can adopt your ducks online at duckrace.com/Murfreesboro.
You can see the difference at Murfreesboro Automotive when you walk in the door.
You can tell where his heart is. He's good at what he does. He wants to help you.
Longtime customer Kelly Holcomb talks about Chuck Haynes and the staff at Murfreesboro Automotive.
They get to your car in a reasonable amount of time, and they're going to help you no matter what it takes.
From major engine work to the simple oil change, Murfreesboro Automotive can take care of it all. They're on Richley Road. Just turn off Broad between Chewy's and Chili's. 962-7327.
It's the Truman Show, a look at the people and news shaping Rutherford County with Truman Jones.
And welcome back with us, Shirley Ferris Jones. And we were talking about our listening audience, and I was so shocked yesterday. I was really disappointed. I ran into Mary Edith Martin McFarland. Of course, that's Tommy Martin, Mr. Murfreesboro's daughter. And she didn't even know we had a radio show.
Mary Edith, it isn't so.
I couldn't believe it. I said, you got to be kidding me, lady. She was out riding her bike on the Greenway with her son, and Jackie and I were out walking on the Greenway and having a big time. And I got to thinking, there she is in our class, and we put it out on the class of 59. I mean, Marsha Littlefield, Porterfield puts that out every week. And I couldn't believe that she wasn't keeping up. And I thought she was one of the good girls.
Mary Edith, say it isn't so. Your honor has been impugned, girlfriend. You've got to do something about this.
All right, what projects have you got going on now? I know that you're not standing still. You've got to be looking at something or you'll go crazy.
Well, I've got some programs and book signings lined up. To do, and so right now I'm just kind of status quo, shall we say, just kind of catching up with myself. I really haven't started any new projects because I really haven't had any time to right now. I've got some ideas, yeah, but
any you want to share with us?
Well, one thing I'm really interested in, and it's going to take some digging, and I've got to have some time to do it, is the role of the Cherokee Nation in the Civil War.
Wow.
And that
there's another thing that hasn't been discussed much.
My great grandfather J.P. Kennerly was the Cherokee Indian agent for North Georgia and that part of Tennessee that bordered Franklin County. And so with the Indian Removal Act of 1836 and everybody heading to Oklahoma by force, he married Nancy Crane Scoggins. She was a Cherokee woman. She was literate. She was a Christian woman. And to my Aunt Ruth Ferris's dying day, she disavowed any knowledge of Cherokee heritage in our family. I proved it to Aunt Ruth, and she said, "Ann, we don't talk about things like that."
You know, it's a sad part of our history. In my family tree, and I got this from my Aunt Nancy McNabb, there is a lady that's listed as one of my people that only is listed as an Indian woman. It did not list her name, and I thought, you know, that's terrible. But I'm proud to have her in my my heritage. I really am.
Absolutely. Well, you know, it's kind of interesting. So many of the Cherokees in the North Georgia area, you know, from the time that gold was discovered in Dahlonega, Georgia, the writing was on the wall. They were very prosperous. Some of them owned slaves. In fact, they had prosperous plantations. They prospered. They thrived. Some of the leaders of the Cherokee Nation saw the writing on the wall. They didn't trust Andrew Jackson, and they didn't trust John Ross.
Andrew Jackson didn't trust them either.
That's right. That's right. So they went on to Oklahoma. Mm-hmm. They got the creme de la creme of the lands out there. Mm-hmm. And so by the time the Trail of Tears occurred, and, you know, with the forced removal of the Native Americans, these people in Oklahoma were already well established. They had taken their slaves with them. I mean, they had something equivalent to the plantations they'd had in Georgia, which, you know, the lands were divided up and sold, in a lottery to white people. But there was a lot of rift between the two factions, those who supported John Ross, those who did not support John Ross. And then it kind of died down, and then when the Civil War broke out, some enlisted for the North and some enlisted for the South. And you would have thought that all the Native Americans would have hated the whites and not fought for them on either side. But it kind of renewed their problems with one another.
You know, you think about the Civil War, North versus South, but in reality, only a few states actually had blood shed on their properties, at least a large amount of it. You look at Tennessee. Tennessee was right in the
next
the
to Virginia. Tennessee had more battles and skirmishes fought
on
her soil.
You had Tennessee, you had Virginia, and you had Georgia that really caught the brunt of it all the way through the line.
And a lot was going on in Mississippi too. But the war in
the
West,
northern part.
The war in the West, I don't think has ever gotten the acclaim that it should have. You know, so much emphasis has been placed on, you know, the war in the East. Well, the war in the West, well, not anything.
Now you're including the West as what?
I'm including us. You know, we were part of the war in the West.
Okay. And it's funny, all of that land, the United States, and it was just in a fairly small area of our country.
Really?
When you think about it. All right. It's been a great show, Shirley.
I've had such a good time, as always. Thank you for inviting me.
We're going to have you back on. You're always a breath of fresh air for us.
Oh, you're so kind. Well, you know I'll come.
And we'll have Mr. Greg Tucker. I think you know him.
I believe I know Greg.
He will be on tomorrow at 2 o'clock. We'll see you guys then.
Bye.